The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We head up until 2 o'clock. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer coming up an hour from now. KSHB 41 Sports Director, presented by Empower Payments. Coming up tonight, the Eastern Conference play-in games as the Heat and 76ers get things rolling around 6 o'clock, followed by Hawks and Bulls. We'll have the Atlanta-Chicago matchup right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That game around 8:30 or so. Our cover starting at 8 o'clock. A little pregame activity with that. Had those games last night for you right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You know, we started off the conversation today. We'll catch up with Ryan Tracy here in a little bit. Started off the conversation wondering about the end of a dynasty. Did we watch the Warriors leave the court for the last time as that Warriors dynasty? And we all sort of agreed that the answer to that is yes. And what a dynasty it was in an era. 12 seasons, 4 NBA titles, 73-9 record in a season, and 19 All-Star appearances from those three players, the Splash Brothers and Draymond Green. And so the end of an era. We also sort of looked at what's happened with that team. The age that's happening certainly is the bigger part of that, but also not being able to replenish some of the parts around them. The biggest one being the age. I mean, Steph Curry had a good year this year. It wasn't like Steph Curry was averaging 10 points per game. Had a fine season this year. Still shooting 40% from behind the arc, you know, but he's going to be 36 years old. Klay Thompson, 34. Draymond Green's going to be 34. You know, and Klay Thompson's an unrestricted free agent. So we've seen the dynasties that come along, and the Chiefs are in the middle of that. And how do you maintain those things? Well, when you've got the franchise quarterback, it's a little bit easier than saying you've got to have, you know, these multiple players that are there in this big three that stay playing together, stay healthy, and stay at the top of their game. You need Mahomes to stay at the top of his game, while also the guys around Mahomes to continue to play at a high level, and the guys above Mahomes in the, you know, front office at GM and coaches and other members to be performing at a high enough level and choosing those players and developing those players so that you can have an extended dynasty, have an extended run to where you are competing for championships, where the New England Patriots had two different dynasties, 3 out of 4, and then coming back later on, winning 3 before Tom Brady ultimately called it quits. And maybe we look back at that 2018 Super Bowl as that last sort of gasp from the Patriots that Chiefs could have won that game. We know that in the AFC Championship game, and whether it's offsides or a coin flip, Chiefs certainly could have won that game, and then the Patriots go on to beat the Rams in the Super Bowl. And the next year, they lose to, what, the Titans in the playoffs, and then you see Tom Brady leave and ends up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and wins another one, but the Patriots have been shells of themselves since then. The Chiefs, right in the middle, enjoying this particular dynasty right now. 6 straight AFC Championship games and, you know, going to 4 Super Bowls, winning 3 of them. So, you know, we've seen that so far with this this Chiefs team. One of the things also we were talking about, and you know, we'll continue to discuss over the next 8 days or so when we get into the NFL draft, is while we look at GMs and organizational history of drafting and whether they are good at it, bad at it, indifferent, sort of in the middle, not indifferent, but in the middle, good, bad, you know, roughly average in being able to draft and draft at a particularly high level. You know, a lot of people look at the GMs, you look at, you know, the scouts, you look at the coaches, but there's a cohesion that feels like it goes along with that. And it's one of the reasons why I do believe, you know, the Chiefs may be viewed as better at it than other teams because of that sort of cohesive, together, one common approach and view of some of the different players. Let's talk some NFL football, some Chiefs football, some draft with Ryan Tracy, RGR, Locked On Chiefs podcast as well. Ryan, welcome to the show. How are you, brother?
I'm keeping up. How are you doing?
You know what? I'm doing just fine. I'm always curious, like, for somebody like yourself that is a content creator, is somebody that studies the draft and studies prospects and, you know, has different mock drafts and things like that, do you give much thought to other mock drafts? Do you take their, you know, mock drafts and selections into account when sort of you're coming up with your own ideas of where the Chiefs may go? Are there others you trust more? Like, how does somebody in your position? So to me, I'm consuming all of it, right? It's a mock draft. I'm going to look at it, see what this particular person thinks. But somebody like yourself, do you, you know, weigh other mock drafts differently? Do you just dismiss them and go, well, I got my own. I don't need to look at somebody else's.
You know, it's kind of a two-phase approach for me. I always start out as though I'm some new guy that walked in the room and Brett Veach wants to know what I think about his plan. And so I'm trying to take it from a Chiefs perspective, what's best for the organization, and make my recommendation. So I don't really care what somebody else has mocked, except when I'm actually going through the virtual process of who else has already been taken off the board, that kind of thing. I'm trying to make my best selection for what I think is best for the team. But every now and then you got to step outside that. And as you cover the league in general, and the last few years has certainly expanded for me where the other sites start to take off. NFL33.com is definitely league-wide, and it looks at team building. And then you have to start to think about every GM has tendencies. Every evaluation team, whether it's on down to the, you know, the intern scouts all the way up to the directors of personnel, everybody has their quirks or their preferences. And that's where you start to really have to get into to the muck about would a team with X person leading their evaluation want this or want something else. And that's where it gets very, very strugglesome. Something that I'm still, you know, obviously 20 years into this process, coming to grips with as new executives around the league come into power, you have to take all that into account.
Well, we talked about at the beginning of the show, Ryan, and sort of discussing things that we would talk with you about. And, you know, Peter Schrager's a guy who's well-respected around the league, and people look at his mock drafts, and he's been as good as anybody in the mock drafts, and he doesn't put out a lot. He puts out two, one the week before and one the week of. And his first mock draft, and talking with people around the league, has the Chiefs 32 taking Jalen Polk. And, you know, he's a guy that I thought, you know, second round, if he's there at 64, if they don't take a wide receiver, or maybe they don't go wide receiver in the first round, maybe they trade back and they take somebody like a Polk. Then with Peter Schrager and maybe him showing up in some others, should we get to know Jalen Polk a little bit more before next week?
I think we definitely should. Not necessarily for day one. I don't know that we have to be friendly with him on Thursday night, but he's definitely a guy that you want to be pals with because he has a lot of the characteristics that the Chiefs actually really do like. He's got good athleticism. He is almost identical to Juju Smith-Schuster and Rashee Rice in terms of testing. He's got a little bit there. He's a little bit more explosive vertically, doesn't have the top-end speed, so he's not going to be your D threat, but he's got some of those things. He can settle against zone. He's very, very comfortable, partially in the offense that he ran at Washington, but in having Michael Penix act as quarterback at Washington, very comfortable in tight spaces with DBs in contact. Penix throws into very, very small windows, and his arm talent gives him that kind of green light to pepper it in. His body control allows him then, Jalen, to adjust to that and to really, I think, have the next level evolution for a college guy coming into the league of understanding about body positioning and using your hands to get away from your core while shielding away from DBs. I think that sets him up for very much accelerated success in the NFL. And those are some of the, you know, in attributes that are so minute that the Chiefs will notice that maybe some other teams won't, and certainly a lot of the media won't as well.
You know, we've discussed and sort of talked about Rashee Rice and if the Chiefs change their draft plans for Rashee Rice, and I've used the term like you don't exchange 4 years for four games and change how you're going to approach a wide receiver to go, well, you may lose Rashee Rice for four games, so now we got to do this, now we got to trade up and get a wide receiver because Rashee Rice might miss four games, maybe he misses more, regardless, it sounds better by saying 4 years and four games. But if you know, discussing that, and we've discussed some of the off the field stuff and things like that, but my question to you would be, if we're still, and I think the Chiefs still have to wonder, you know, what goes on with Rashee Rice. Not does it change their draft plan, as in, like, now we got to go up and definitely grab a wide receiver, but does it change maybe strategy to a degree of, okay, we need to draft maybe for floor to build an entire room rather than, you know, if Rashee Rice was there and all good, and if he had to be a number two with Travis Kelce as a number one and build some other guys around him, if we had a guy that might explode into being a number one receiver or could fall back, we can take that chance. Is it more for you, if they're going wide receiver, draft for the high floor? Or maybe somebody that might be more volatile, that has more of a range of outcomes in the draft?
You know, I like your phrase there, four games for 4 years. Could it be more? Not sure. Could it be half a season? Possibly. There are still a lot of things, as Coach Reed likes to say, that are going to be involved in the legal process that mm-hmm. we don't know about yet. So I think the safest thing to do then is to don't make any changes. Your board is what your board is. Mm-hmm. Jalen Polk happens to be the best available receiver at the time that you're on the clock, then he's a potential selection. He's still got to outweigh the defensive ends, the defensive interior pass rushers, which I do think are going to be some guys available at 32, as well as the offensive tackles. I do think, nothing against Peter Schrag. He does a great job, mm-hmm. and like you said, he's very methodical in what he does release. There's very few people in America that are higher on Jalen Polk than me, maybe only Nate Tice, and I don't have him as a 30s pick. I have Jalen in the low 40s, and so at 32, it would still be a bit of a reach for me. I love him as a trade-back selection, though. If the Chiefs can move back to, say, 37, 38, that's the perfect area.
I've seen Xavier Leggett there as well, and that's been a little bit of a surprise as his name's come up a little bit lately, that Leggett from South Carolina, who was just, you know, dynamite this last year, but has had a number of years of very little production. And it's always a concern of, like, okay, what did this guy do before, and now he burst onto the scene with this great production, but the size is like, okay, is he DK Metcalf, right? He's got all this size and strength and all of that, but I've seen his name, and that was a surprise, because I was thinking more trade back, the second round, would he be a candidate for in the 40s? You know, is Leggett a guy that's moving up that is deserving of being talked about late in the first round, like now Jalen Polk has at least talked about a little bit?
You know, Leggett is a fan favorite, and I don't want to dissuade that. But perception is very, very important. The fact is, Jalen Polk is a half inch taller than he is. And no one seems to realize that. They're only separated at the combine by 7 pounds. Their speed is different, whereas Leggett has top-end speed. But you're not looking at a vertical that's drastically different between the two players, right? It's 2.5 inches. And Leggett is actually less explosive in the horizontal plane on the broad jump than Jalen Polk is. So for those that feel that there's a drastic difference in the two grades of those players, mm-hmm. I think there's some mistakes going on there. Now, there's a couple of factors here. Yes, he's got the DK Metcalf build, but he is not his size. And we've actually had a lot of arguments back and forth on the staff at Rogue Analytics with those who do feel that that is a worthy attribute that should play in more so to the evaluation. But there's also a couple things working against it. And that is, as you said, late production, year of emergence, particularly with wide receivers. This is always a factor that you see late emergence receivers struggle at the next level. A lot of that generally has to do with visual sight adjustments and understanding the offensive scheme. And there's maybe no place in the NFL that's more difficult in those two categories than in Kansas City.
Yeah.
So I personally have Leggett quite a bit lower than Polk, specifically for that reason. And should they come back around to him and the rest of the league sees it the way I do, they might have a chance to select him as a second player off the board in this draft, or maybe even beyond that.
Ryan Trace is our guest, Rogue Analytics, NFL33.com, Locked On Chiefs podcast. You mentioned some of the measurables there from the combine, and the Marvin Harrison discussion is interesting to me, because it's like the measurables versus, you know, the tape, that there are some that it's like, look, I just love these numbers, right? What he's doing at the with the broad jump, the high jump, you know, the 40 time is, the 10-yard, the three cone. What are these different things that he looks like in these different drills? And this is a reason why I may, you know, lean this guy over that guy. And then Marvin Harrison doesn't work out. And it's like, yeah, I don't care because I know what he is. I see him on film and I know what Marvin Harrison is. And maybe it's the difference of a high-level player like a Marvin Harrison or a Roma Dunze or Neighbors or something like that, that, you know, do they really need to work out to show that? But where are you at it? There's got to be a combination of the two. But is it just when it's a high-level prospect like a Marvin Harrison Jr. that, you know, he doesn't work out? Who cares? You know, you don't need the numbers. If he runs a 4.55, he runs a 4.55. If that's what he was projected to do, who cares? He's still Marvin Harrison Jr. And he's that particular guy. Is that where sort of how you land on the discussion of like, well, this guy looked like this on film, but oh my God, he did this at the combine. So, you know, now I've got to change my perception of him.
I'm old enough to be the exact opposite. I marked Marvin Harrison down for not participating in the pre-draft process. If you have nothing to hide and you're the best out there, I don't care. Like you said, if you run a 4.55, get out there and do it. Show that you're willing to compete against the best of the best. So that's actually detraction in my mind. Now, I am of a generation where proof is in the pudding and you show up. And if you're invited, you don't miss it. And so it's definitely a generational aspect. Malik Nabers should not be let off the hook either. But I will tell you this. Exemplary performance against college defenses is one thing. The key to the draft process and why you should participate in the pro day is because that shows you a more accurate projection to NFL eyes against NFL defenses in NFL games. And that's where he comes in lacking. There is a distinct possibility there will be teams that now do not have him as the number one receiver. In terms of performance on the field, it's hard to argue that he is ahead of both Adunze and Neighbors. I actually have Adunze as the number two right behind him for all intents and purposes. But Adunze has shown a willingness to compete at every turn, at every possibility. And one thing that he has the advantage of Marvin Harrison is he will play through contact. He is better at the catch point against defensive backs in contact than Marvin Harrison is. That's on his film. There's no denying that. So it just depends on how important that is. If you feel that you're going to be in a scheme where Marvin Harrison can just run wild, no matter how fast that is, because you're going to put defensive backs to decisions, then no worries. There's absolutely no question there. But if you are somebody who has either an inexperienced offensive coordinator or has problems adjusting to what defenses throw at them, that becomes a little bit more problematic. So I think it's very hard to go wrong with any of these three guys at the top. It's just going to be about what did you want to see and what did you get?
Ryan Trace is our guest, RGR, Rogue Analytics, NFL33.com, Locked On Chiefs podcast. And, you know, I want to talk about tackles here in a second. But, you know, as you were talking about some of those receivers, you know, I'm thinking of, you know, those top three and can't go wrong. And I'm thinking of last year when there was like a consensus of, you know, there are four guys in the first round and JSN and Addison and Flowers and Johnston, although I hated Johnston. I didn't want the Chiefs to touch him, but we'll see if he ends up being something with the Chargers. But I also like looking at sort of comparing draft classes to kind of give an idea of, you know, where a certain class compares to another one. And I'm wondering if as you look at this class this year compared to last year, where would a Smith and Jigba or an Addison or a Flowers fit in? Are they right after the top three? Would they be the fourth or fifth receiver taken in this year's draft if they were, you know, waited one more year? If this was sort of a combined this year's draft and last year's draft, where would those guys be that were like, oh my God, can you get a JSN or an Addison or a Flowers in the first round?
I do think they would all be first round selections. I do think they would slot in below Malik Nabers and right in with Brian Thomas. I personally would have Addison above Thomas overall. I would have JSN, again, another guy who in the tradition of Ohio State didn't necessarily complete the pre-draft process. I would put him right about even with Thomas. And then I think you could have an argument from there about where do you slot in everybody else amongst the Troy Franklins, the Ladd McConkeys. I actually have Jalen as number 7 on my wide receiver list above Xavier Worthy, because I do like what Worthy does. He does bring the speed, but there are some questions there. And there's also a effort question with his teammate as well. I don't think you have those questions with those top three from last year.
Interesting. Ryan Tracy is our guest. At pick 32, there's been, you know, I've liked Kingsley Suamatia. Sua Mataia. I love saying the name, and I don't know why I got it wrong the first time. I'm very disappointed in myself. I like Kingsley, and I want him to draft him for a number of different reasons. One, to keep saying the name and him being a Chief, but certainly he's got the traits. And I'm wondering if, you know, sitting at 32, how many or who are maybe in your mind the actual left tackles that could be there? Or are you fine if they took a guy that may translate more to a right tackle or has a potential to be left tackle and they go in this season with maybe a little trust in Wanya Morris? Who's there at 32 that you feel like, all right, this guy can play left tackle in the NFL? Because that isn't typically where you find your starting left tackles is late in the first round.
No, it's definitely not. And Kingsley would be amongst that group.
Mm-hmm.
I do like him. I do think he is more raw than another very athletic prospect that I do think is a left, that I do think is also raw. Kingsley may have a lower floor, but he might have a higher ceiling than Tyler Guyton, who I do think is a possibility at 32. He could be there. I'm discounting guys like Graham Barton from Duke, who I do think is going to play inside. And okay. I'm discounting Roger Rosengart, who's a right only, in my opinion. But that's where it gets very interesting. There was a lot of hubbub when Juwan Taylor was signed to this contract in this town for this quarterback. Now I think you see what it's done, because I am not convinced that if the Chiefs take a tackle, it has to be a left tackle.
Okay.
I am convinced they need an offensive tackle that can push and hopefully compete and even beat out Wanya Morris. That is a good sign, given that he was able to get on the field as a rookie. But I'm not convinced that someone like Amarius Mims is not in the taking, that you move Juwan to left, and that you let the best tackle available to you get on the field and you put your best five. We've heard that through the years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that slipped away a couple of the last seasons, but I do think that that is also part of the scenario here.
Last one for you. Ryan Tracy is our guest. What do you and how do you maybe assess the strategy behind the top 30 visits? How do you look at the players the Chiefs bring in their top 30 visits? Do you glean much from the particular names, or do you glean from the positional group? Do you look at maybe the range where the guys may be drafted and what round grades are? What's the strategy you think behind some of those top 30 visits for the Chiefs?
You know, one of the most entertaining things about covering this team is what has happened since the departure of John Dorsey. And I think that's a personality trait of Brett Veach. And if you ever watch any of those old movies about the Four Horsemen magician thing, right? It's always about subterfuge. There's something shiny over here and something else is going on in a very different spot. And I feel like that's how Brett Veach approaches the 30 visits. They've had guys drafted that they didn't have in for a visit and didn't even talk to at the combine. They've had guys that have been on this team that have been run all the way through the process over and over and over. I don't think there's any way on a year-to-year basis to extract what Brett Veach is trying to do with who comes in for a visit. But I will say this. I think when you see multiple guys at position groups of need, it connects the dots enough that that smokescreen is on purpose, but the need for the positional group,
yeah,
I think he is real. So that does ring true for me.
And the Jalen McMillan one is interesting because of some of the off the field stuff and red flags, and you know, is he moving off teams' boards? The Chiefs a couple of years ago, I've you know mentioned this a few times. The Chiefs a couple of years ago, you know, brought in George Pickens for a top 30 visit, but a lot of people around the Chiefs that covered it said, you know, he wasn't on their board. That they were not going to draft George Pickens. Was that a smokescreen, or was that, let's bring in George Pickens ourselves to get a better view, and he didn't change our view, and we're not going to draft him. But we wanted to do the due diligence more in person of a guy that may have some red flags, and maybe that's a Jalen McMillan type deal. So I do wonder from that standpoint, or if it was the subterfuge where it's a, here's a shiny thing, and look, we're looking at George Pickens, and we're actually not looking at George Pickens.
I think both things can be true. Mm-hmm. Certainly the due diligence of looking the man in the face and understanding how he's approaching something, his demeanor to his potential bosses, to guys that he has to work with. I think that's certainly valuable, and I think that is exactly what happened with George Pickens and probably happens with every prospect that comes through. But I do also at the same time feel that there is a bit there that you can't tell me that no one in Pittsburgh wasn't influenced by the fact that hey, the Chiefs brought in Pickens. We might as well take a look at him.
Yeah.
So are they happy with that decision now? My guess is not. And I think that might have been a factor with the fact that when a team on a winning streak like this takes a look at a prospect, it carries some weight around the league.
Yeah. Ryan Tracy, RGR Football, Rogue Analytics, Locked On Chiefs, NFL33.com. Ryan, you're the man. Really appreciate the time, brother, and look forward to our next conversation already.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. There's Ryan Tracy. Great stuff from him, as always. Love the podcast. And, of course, as he talked about, you know, league-wide NFL 33 Substack, NFL33.substack.com, that you can go and check out and read a lot of the different coverage that's there. We'll take a timeout, come back, continue rolling. More Zone next. All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, Dylan Michaels. We had up until 2 o'clock throwing stuff around here. The phone, I'm slamming this phone. I've been trying to, I've been talking to people. I've been, you know, contacting all of my different sources and everything. Now I'm questioning myself and I'm, you know, almost feeling like an apology. I know we joked about Roma Dunze all the time about all these red flags on Roma Dunze. I wouldn't draft him in the top 31. I know that. Nobody would do. I heard he hates kids and he likes to kick puppies. That's just what I heard. If I'm a GM, top 31, no way. 32, that's probably where I would take him. Roma Dunze, something like that. We joked about it, but I could have sworn I read a couple of different places about, you know, Jalen McMillan. And so that's why I brought up, like, the top 30 visit, having him in. I can't find it anywhere. So if I have mistaken him for someone else, I apologize to Jalen specifically. I know he listens to the show all the time because I'm not reading anything about him now with any of the red flags. So I could have sworn it was Jalen because I connected the dots with, like, oh, they had him in a top 30 visit. That makes sense. Okay, they've done that before with George Pickens. I clearly was thinking of somebody else, and I don't know who it was that I was thinking of. Sterling Holmes is what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
So
we'll go with that. As long as you say only glowing things about me.
That's right, yeah. There are green flags with you.
Yes, a lot of green flags.
Not red flags, a lot of green
flags
with you.
He cares too much. he gives so much to charity. It's
kind
of alarming. Loves the kids.
Yeah, absolutely.
Loves the kids.
I don't know. For the time being, I'll say that I apologize, sir. But if I read that again, then I'm coming right back and stronger. No. But I think it's interesting, like, the different top 30 visits and what the strategy behind that is, whether it is, as Ryan Tracy said, here's a shiny thing over here, but we're actually looking over there, so we're having these guys in. My view is maybe one of the biggest, probably, strategies and the usefulness of these things would be the later round guys that you get to know them a little bit more. Maybe that can separate one guy from another, but you may also develop a relationship with somebody that you want to get as an undrafted free agent. Because looking at some of the top 30 visits that they've had, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, seven different guys that are looked at as a seventh rounder or undrafted free agents. And that's just different people's, you know, that could be looking at different people's big boards, whether that be PFF or Nate Tice or KC Sports Network, whatever it might
sure.
be. Like, looking at different people's grades and sort of a range of, like, this guy could be in the seventh round. He might be a priority free agent. He just might be an undrafted free agent, not necessarily a priority. But that's a decent number if you're talking about essentially a quarter of all the guys you're bringing in or guys that may not be drafted or late seventh rounders, you know, and they don't typically, you know, to draft a lot of the guys you bring in, that would be, I think, more coincidental than anything. They've brought in a few guys over the last few years that they've actually ended up drafting, and that's of their 30 visits. That's, what, 90, 120 guys that they've brought in visits, and they've drafted like four of them?
Yeah.
But it is, to me, it's the positional that they're bringing in more than anything, so they're getting a better idea overall of the position. And then some of the guys later on as that might be undrafted free agents, might be priority free agents, might be, this is the seventh round now, we got all these different guys. We met with him. We liked him, didn't like him, whatever it might be. This was the deciding factor was bringing this guy in of whether we draft him or not. is part of that too. The strategy behind that is interesting because they rarely draft anybody on that list of guys that they bring in. I would love for them to change that with Ben Sinnott, Kansas State tight end who they brought in.
Yeah, I've been a pretty big fan of Ben Sinnott. Yeah. If he wore number 87 or 86, 88, 89 in college, we'd all be sitting here going, yeah, this dude's a legit stud tight end prospect. But because he wore what number was like 40?
34.
You're sitting here going, he's fullback.
Yeah. No, that's exactly I've talked about that myself. Like his number played tricks on me in watching him play because wearing 34, he doesn't look like, well, he's got the size of like a tight end, right? I mean, maybe he's a little bit smaller for a tight end and. You know, I'd be a little, maybe he's more of a blocker. Could he be like an H-back or a Kyle Juszczyk? And, you know, but it's a great point. Like, well, put number 87 on him, put number 88 on him, and do you change your view? I probably would. Yeah. I probably would. So it's his fault. I blame Ben Sinnott. It's not my own view. It's not my inability to garner distinction between guys wearing numbers and what they look like on the field. I blame Ben Sinnott, and that's what I've always done, is if I'm wrong about a prospect, it's the prospect's fault.
Did you already say this? It's George Kittle. His college number was 46, so it is.
I didn't say that, yeah.
See, yeah.
No.
Throws you off.
I will say this. You,
I mean,
and
Ben Sinnott's 6'4". So he looks like he's 6'1", right? He looks like Ben Sinnott is 6'1", 270. But he's 6'4", 250, you know? Like he's
the 40-some inch vertical, huh?
Yes.
Did he have the highest vertical?
Yeah, his vertical was ridiculous, yes.
But I will say it is interesting because you and I both independently came to the same conclusion, and it was all based on a dude's number.
Oh, yeah. Just change your number next time.
There's a picture of him lining up at number 34, and you're like, what? No.
Yeah, because I see Kyle Juszczyk when I think of that. And the way he blocks, pancake blocks and things like that, but he's a damn fine tight end. And if the Chiefs got him on... some people think fourth round. If they got him in the fourth round, frickin' sign me up. He might be a guy that you got to take, late
third.
Second day, late third round or something like that. But yeah, I'm all for if they bring in Ben Sinnott because if your tight end room now is Travis Kelce, Noah Gray, Ben Sinnott, Irv Smith, I feel really good about that as opposed to your third tight end last year was Blake Bell, and any route that he ran was simply a waste of a route.
I will say this. He is 6'4", 250 with a 40-inch vertical. That's not me rounding up on the vertical, a 40-inch vertical. Have we thought about him playing basketball?
I bet he could ball.
If you're 6'4", 250 and can 40-inch vertical, you're dunk contest.
Well, so you're trying to go the exact opposite of Antonio Yates and Tony Gonzalez.
Yeah, you don't see that very
often.
Like
a
football player,
basketball player. Yeah,
surprisingly, no, you don't see that very. I will say, going back to your original thought with all these guys the Chiefs are bringing in. Now, I don't know about Mike Dana, but a lot of people on Mike Dana's or on draft boards had Mike Dana as a seventh rounder or undrafted guy.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs ended up drafting him in the fifth. So I think some of these guys that they do bring in, again, we don't see it very often, but I think fifth round on, if they like these guys, they could be swayed one way or the other. You know, how much of a reach is it drafting a seventh rounder in the fifth? If you're like, well, I like this guy. I don't want a team in the seventh to draft him. Sure, he might be there, but what if he's not? We like him here. We want to have the control, and I feel like that's kind of what happened with Mike Dana, and look what happened with him.
They brought in three wide receivers. They've brought in three defensive tackles. They've only brought in one defensive end, which is interesting because that one defensive end is actually the highest graded guy of all of the guys that have been in a top 30 visit, Marshawn Nealon from Western Michigan. So that's the only one that's like has close to a first round grade, and that's a defensive end. And then when it comes to offensive linemen, they've brought in one, two, three, four tackles and one guard. So five of their 30 visits have been, or five of the guys they brought in, because they haven't brought in 30 guys. You know, you don't have to, you get 30, you don't have to bring in 30. You can bring in five if you want to. I don't know how many people actually get to 30 each and every year. They've also brought in a cornerback and a safety. So the main position groups have been offensive line, wide receiver, defensive tackle. Have been the majority of those. And even if it's just three. You know, three wide receivers, three defensive tackles, and then five offensive linemen, four of those being offensive tackles. It's not a surprise. Even if we take out the interior, even if we take out the guard,
you're looking at five offensive tackles, three wide receivers, three defensive tackles are the most of a positional group that they brought in. Defensive tackles, kind of, but not really a surprise, because they can take a defensive tackle. It just, you know, may not be in the first round. Like the defensive tackles they brought in, if we're looking at, you know, combined sort of grades and ranges for these guys, like they brought in Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State, second or third round, second day guy.
Yeah.
Second day guy, not a first day guy, but a second day guy. Christian Boyd, Northern Iowa. He's a late third day guy, right? Sixth or seventh round, maybe even undrafted. That's somebody that they brought in. Juwan Briggs, Cincinnati. Late third rounder or not drafted. So you've got somebody that's sort of the second day, and then the other guys are late third day and maybe not drafted at all. So it's like, well, yeah, you're bringing in defensive tackles. Why? I mean, you just signed Chris Jones. That doesn't mean they're bringing a defensive tackle to draft in the first round. You've got fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round picks that you got to figure out who to bring in, and a couple of running backs, too.
I mean, it could be Keandre Coburn. Oh,
I liked the Coburn.
Has there ever been a player who was drafted in the sixth round that somehow collectively everyone thought was going to be an impact player? And then
Trey Smith.
No. And then fizzled.
Oh, sorry.
It was Steve Harvey. You know,
Trey Smith. Let me finish the question, damn it. Hey, what's up, Antsy?
That everyone was wrong on. Because I don't remember many people like, and if it was a sixth rounder, but I heard so much love for a sixth rounder who then was gone by what, game six?
Yeah, going pretty quickly, unfortunately. Yeah, I'm with you. And then there are some late that you're like, how did they get this guy in this round? And it's Trey Smith. So you never know. More Zone next. All right, wrapping up the hour here. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer coming up at 1 o'clock. Is it already 1 o'clock right now? My goodness, it's so close. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer, KSHB 41 Sports Director. I also, you know, we looked at some of the top 30 visits. Chiefs with a couple of running backs there. Carson Steele from UCLA and Rasheen Ali from Marshall. Both of those guys, oddly enough, were on Bruce Feldman's freaks list. So every year before the college season, Bruce Feldman puts out his list of the top freaks in college football. And both of those guys were on the freaks list. So their size and strength and
their love of calculus? Or
yes, okay. That's exactly right. Yeah. And their athletic ability.
Oh, that makes more sense.
So it's all of that, just freaks and their love of horror movies, too.